Welcome to the Advanced Persistent Security Podcast, where we discuss the world of IT and cybersecurity. Don't be left in the dark about what is going on in the world around you. Here is your host, Joe Gray.
Welcome to another edition of the Advanced Persistent Security Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Gray. Before we get started, the thoughts and opinions expressed on this show are mine and the guests alone and do not represent those of our employers, past, present, or future. With that being said, before we get to the actual show, I just want to let you know that this is one of the lost episodes, meaning it was recorded in 2017 and it was just never published for one reason or another. I'm going back through those episodes, doing proper editing and publishing them. So stay tuned. There's a total of four of them that will be published before we resume new episodes. I hope you enjoy. Thank you. Welcome to the latest episode of the Advanced Persistent Security Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Gray. Before we get started, the thoughts and opinions expressed on this show are mine and my guests alone. They do not reflect those of mine or their employers, past, present, or future. With that being said, our current guest this evening,
Gregory Evans.
I'm purely kidding. It is Jason Street. He is the InfoSec Ranger at Pony Express. You may be familiar with the name from speaking engagements. He travels the world all the time, very busy person, getting the good word of information security out. And as a handy little tidbit, he's actually the 2006 Time Person of the Year. Jason, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you. I'm very proud of that title.
As you should be. Is there anything I left out that you want people to know before we get started, or does that pretty much sum it up?
Yeah, I'm very, unfortunately, too easy to Google, so it's pretty good.
Perfect. I didn't spend a lot of time Googling. That was basically LinkedIn. Also with us on the line would be Tracy, InfoSec, Sherpa Mayleaf. How's it going, Tracy?
Hi, gentlemen. Good evening. It's lovely to talk to you both.
Absolutely. Anytime the Sherpa stops by, it's a good podcast.
Why, thank you. And I'm really excited about our guest this evening, Jason. Thank you so much for joining us. I've had the pleasure of listening to you present, and I might bring up that one session that I sat in at Tactical Edge in Bogota. That was a really great session about sharing your mistakes. So maybe we can get to that later as well.
Oh, for sure.
Actually, if we want, we can just kick it off with some mistakes because, you know, what better way to start it off than to prove that everyone is human and everyone makes mistakes?
Well, let me set it up for a second for you, Jason, that you gave this really great talk at, you know, End Mistakes. I've made a few. And what really affected me so deeply was just, you know, in this industry and this community where people are, you know, very much about promoting themselves and self-promotion, I thought you took a very thoughtful approach to explaining that human side to security. So is there anything that stands out from that presentation that you'd like to go over again right now?
I think one of the key things that I did for that talk was no one wants to talk about their mistakes. It's like, and no one wants to admit that we all make mistakes. So basically what I was doing with that talk was, I'm like, I'm going to tell you mistakes. And at the same time that I'm telling you these mistakes, you can relate because you were there at some point in your career. It's like, you may not have made the exact same mistake, but you made something similar. And it was just to make it people reflect. It just make people understand that you have to step back and say, if I'm going to get better, I have to acknowledge that I've not done something 100% right. And that's how you improve. It's like, you don't improve just magically because you know how to do everything right. You improve by going and assessing where you've made a mistake and you realize that you've made that and you try to build on it.
I love that philosophy right there. I used to do jiu-jitsu. I always say I'm about to do it again. But one of the philosophies within the sport of Brazilian jiu-jitsu is that you either win or you learn. And I think that goes right along with
your talk, because, you know, I'll be the first to admit when I make a mistake, but you're right. People are too quick to point out everyone else's mistakes in industry, especially, and point the blame as opposed to say, hey, you know what? I made a mistake and I learned from it, and here's why I'm better.
Right, exactly. I mean, I've done, I'm really good at making mistakes. It's like I've done, and I actually, the funny thing is with that talk, I deliberately chose mistakes and faults that were bad. I mean, that were like really bad, that put me in a bad light. I mean, I've done some really cool fails that turned out to be really awesome and turned into really good service. In September of last year, I accidentally robbed the wrong bank successfully. That was a mistake, but it was a pretty freaking awesome mistake. In my talk, I made sure these were like really bad, stupid, like, I mean, just don't do these things. These aren't good, and they didn't turn out well for me. So people would understand that they happen to everybody.
Jason, I have a question for you. So as someone who's, you know, newer to this industry and coming from a completely different background, I have to say, I feel like for many of us, the whole concept of breaking things, which is very much common in, I guess, perhaps IT itself, but definitely security, feels very unnatural to me. I'm often, you know, reluctant to kind of get down and get dirty and play around with things, because I just, breaking things feels very unnatural to me. Do you have any suggestions? Because I feel like that falls under the whole mistakes category. Do you have any suggestions of how to try to get over that hesitation of breaking things? Because what if you do break something in a real work environment? How can you get through that, or pardon the pun, break through that barrier that, you know, breaking things is horribly bad for you?
That's a really good question. One of the things, first of all, if you're trying to get started in information security, I get that asked a lot of me through DMs and messaging. I've actually added to the iRonin page, irzeronin.com. There's a getting started page now that actually addresses how to get started in information security. And it talks about, and it stresses about how you should try to get on the blue team first before you get on the red team. Which is the blue team being the defensive side, you know, corporate security, trying to protect your assets, versus the red team, which is trying to break in and trying to steal those assets and show those vulnerabilities. Both are definitely needed. But one of the key points is when you're doing defensive, when you're doing the, and most people, and I suggest, highly suggest, everybody start out as a blue teamer. It's like start out trying to build something and try to build something securely. And you realize that when you do that, a lot of times you're building things that will keep honest people out. You're building things from a perspective of defense. And the problem is the people that are coming after you are not thinking in that mindset. They're just trying to get in. And that's where the red team comes into play. And that's where you learn that breaking it is good. Because if, when I was doing physical security way back, like 30 years ago, every time I would go on site to a new location, my first steps during a patrol would be, how would I rob it? How would I rob this place? How would I break in? How would I be able to get in and get away with it? And then I would find those weaknesses that I came up with, and then I would find out ways to augment the security and augment the presence to counteract that. It's like you can't really tell how you're going to be able to defend something unless you know how to rob it or how to break into it. So you're never breaking in something to be destructive. You're breaking into it to be constructive, to actually add to the defenses. Red team is never something as an adversary. They're an advocate. They're there to help you be more secure. They're there to help protect you by showing you where the faults are, because the bad guys will still break in, but they're not going to give you a report on how it was done afterwards.
No, they are not. And I credit you, Jason, and other, you know, outspoken community members like yourself, because I have noticed a change in how I view things. I am starting to view a little bit more of evaluating something, whether it's physical or online, of how insecure something could be. So I credit you for being so outspoken, because it's definitely been a change of mindset for myself.
Thank you. One thing I would like to add is if you do undergo what I would call an unauthorized pen test, you may actually get a report in the form of Brian Krebs writing about you. Just throwing that out there.
I always say Brian Krebs should not be your IDS. Don't ever play pool with Brian Krebs either, by the way. That's a story that I continue to spread. Never play pool. He's a pool shark.
Gotcha.
So to keep the ball rolling on the breaking into InfoSec, because I take a very active stance with mentoring people. I have a few mentorees at the moment. So aside from just starting out blue, here's one of my favorite questions. What language do you recommend people know to get into information security?
English.
Perfect. I was hoping that was going to be your response. That's what I've been hearing lately. Or the preferred language of your region. That's the other caveat that Leslie Carhart threw on.
Well, yeah, I would say I travel all over the world. I speak four phrases in every country I go to. I try to speak at least four phrases in their native tongue. But one of the things that people don't understand how blessed we are is that mostly English is like the common tongue. Like from The Hobbit, you know, it's mostly everybody. You will find someone wherever you're at that can speak some English. And you should feel very blessed about that. It's like that is the case, because I've gone to countries and I've been stuck trying to communicate. And when you travel, the first thing that you lose when you're traveling is a lot of your biases. It's like you start understanding what the world really is and how it functions and how people are so much alike. But the key thing that you have to understand, that you have to learn to get in any kind of field, is communication. So I say English for this region, but also just having a common language that you can communicate with others as well. Going to different conferences, going to different places, it's very necessary. And it's not just English or the language, but it's also how you communicate it. It's like we like to speak tech. Tech is not English. You have to learn how to speak in a way that people that do not understand tech can understand you. Because I don't care... And I get so tired of this. I go to these conferences and I go to these places and I hear these people get up and they start speaking. And oh my gosh, they sound so leak. Oh my gosh, they sound so together. They know exactly what they're talking about, with the knob sled going over to the zero day that goes over and pones the toaster. And that's just amazing. But you know what? If 90% of your audience walks away without a clue about what just happened and how to protect themselves from it, you've wasted everybody's time. It's like the key to giving a good talk and the key to being a key employee to help secure your company is being able to properly address to your upper management what those threats are in ways that they can understand and then take action on. Because if they don't understand it and they can't properly take action on it, you're wasting everybody's time.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Really great point.
I was doing a CFP review recently, and within a two-paragraph submission, I saw 15 occurrences of the word cyber. And despite how good the submission was, I just kind of I downvoted it for that reason, because it was just too buzzword heavy. I didn't feel like playing IT buzzword bingo that day.
Yeah, and I will agree. I will agree that there's a lot of stuff where you hear. Actually, even the episode I'm in, it calls it cyber terror. I've had to come to realize that cyber is a word that we may not have to embrace, but we have to address. It's like, because once again, I'm not trying to keep the word cyber out of the vernacular because it makes me sound more lead. We need to create the word, use the terminology that people are using so they can understand what we're trying to say. And if I have to go and say, well, this is going to be better cybersecurity for you, and they understand that versus this is good information security or good procedural security, and they don't understand that, well, then what word do I need to use? So we have to, and I don't want to say it's like I'm never going to embrace the word cyber because, you know, I was in the 90s. I know exactly where cyber came from. It's not the same thing. It's like, but you have to address the fact that you have to speak in the terminology that the people that you're addressing will understand because that's who you're trying to protect. It's like you're not trying to protect your image. You're not trying to protect your reputation. You're trying to protect your company's assets. You're trying to protect people's computers and people's networks. And if that means that you have to use terminology that's a little bit more dumbed down, then that's what you do. I mean, I have a mechanic. I do not want to go and take my car into the shop and a mechanic go through and tell me all the different technical aspects of the engine and what's going on with it. I'm not an idiot. I know how to drive a car, but I don't need to know that the valve doohickey on the whatchamacallit carburetor thing is what's malfunctioning. It's like, I just need you to tell me how what I need to do to get it fixed and how much it's going to cost me.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Sit tight. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation.
Are you looking for a place to advertise to the unique audience of IT security professionals and enthusiasts? Look no further. Advanced Persistent Security is seeking sponsors. This slot could be yours. Contact sales at advancedpersistentsecurity.net for more information.
I have a few deals that I would like to let you know about. First and foremost, if you want to attend Hacker Halted for free September 13th and 14th in Atlanta, Georgia, please use code HH18JGCON. HH as in Hacker Halted, 18 as in 2018, JG as in Joe Gray, and CON as in conference for free admission. A normal ticket value is $199. You can also get 25% off your EC Council training of choice, such as Certified Ethical Hacker, Computer Hacking Forensics Investigator, Certified CISO, and ECSA, EC Council Certified Security Administrator, using coupon code HH18JJTRN. HH18JJTRN. Register at hackerhalted.com. Additionally, if you would like $100 off an EC Council Storm Kit, which is a touchscreen Raspberry Pi kit with a USB mobile keyboard containing Kali Linux, use coupon code JGRAYSTORM at iclass.eccouncil.org. Another project that I'm invested in is called Through the Hacking Glass. It is in conjunction with Brian Austin and Peerlist. For more information, please go to peerlist.com and check out hashtag Through the Hacking Glass or hashtag TTHG. You can email us at tthg@peerlist.com.
And we're back from the break. With me this evening, we have Jason Street and the frequent flyer of the show, the very awesome InfoSec Sherpa, Tracy Mayleaf. We're just talking about success in information security, and I believe Tracy has a question to kick off this segment. Take it away, Tracy.
Sure, and I have to say, yes, Jason is way more a frequent flyer than I am. by a lot. But Jason, my question for you was, you spoke about using, you know, the cyber word and how you've come to accept it and how we should use terminology that the users understand. So my specific question was, in a presentation that I give called Introduction to Information Security, to which I usually give for an audience of non-tech types, I have a slide that has this big umbrella on it, and the umbrella is named Information Security, and I talk about how that sexy word cybersecurity is the one that people hear the most, but that it's really just one part under a big umbrella of information security that includes threat intelligence, risk assessment, risk management, physical security, etc. So I guess then I'm just curious, from your perspective, am I doing a non-tech crowd a service or a disservice by kind of explaining this whole umbrella concept of InfoSec?
Yeah, I think it's good to educate them on what the differences are. It's like, I mean, they're still going to, they may still walk away and just say cyber, but it is nuanced. It's like, it's the same thing. And the way I look at it, it's very easy to call someone a doctor. It's like, you're a doctor. Well, no, I'm a vascular surgeon. I am a pathologist. I'm a surgeon for a podiatrist. I mean, it's like, there's all kinds of doctors, right? But when it comes down to it, it's just more convenient to say doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the same thing. I am a forensic analyst. I am a intel threat analyst. I'm a infrastructure security infrastructure person. I am a pen tester. I'm a red teamer. I'm a social engineer. You're a hacker. You know, it's like you're in cybersecurity. So everybody hates the generalizations when it comes to their field, but are so readily available to make it in to someone else's. It's like, you know, because mechanics are mechanics, right? But you got aviation mechanics, you got naval mechanics, you got car mechanics. We do generalizations all the time. We're only sensitive when it comes to our field, but at the same time, we're doing it to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So every time someone in our field in information security gets upset because someone said cybersecurity instead of a specific, form, or someone's just referring them to themselves as a cybersecurity specialist or a, you know, or a hacker, it's like, well, then tell them, it's like, well, when you go and you talk to a doctor, do you address him by his professional title of what he's a doctor of, or do you just say doctor?
It's absolutely. Like, so,
yeah. But I mean, that's what, you can't get mad at someone for saying cyber and a generalization of it when it's so prominent in the media and it makes it convenient. It's like, as long as they're understanding the underlying concepts, I don't really care if they understand the name. They understand, they need to understand how to protect themselves. They need to understand how to keep themselves from being compromised. They need to understand the threats that are out there. They don't necessarily need to understand that cybersecurity is a buzzword. That's not my priority of educating the people.
Yeah, and I don't spend a ton of time on this slide. It's one of those things where I feel like people think that I'm letting them in on a secret. But like, hey, I'm going to level with you. This is, you know, really part of a bigger thing. I feel like people, yeah, like they, I don't expect them to, you know, if they still want to continue calling something cybersecurity, I'm okay with that. But I feel like, you know, for at least 30 seconds to a minute, they feel like they're being let in on like on an insider thing. and so, okay, cool. So I just, since it came up, I was curious what you thought about that. Shifting gears slightly, you mentioned about all your travels and communication and, you know, communicating in different cultures and languages and things like that. So I'm curious if you have anything to share with us about how users in other countries or professionals in other countries are viewing InfoSec. Are we all on the same page, you know, here in North America with professionals and users? Does everybody have all the same problems? Is there anything fundamentally different that perhaps a different culture deals with InfoSec that maybe that we can learn from? Do you see anything unique around the world, or are we all just kind of in this together with the same burdens?
One of the most depressing and wonderful facts that I will share with you is that no matter what country I've been to, no matter what part of the world, it's like we are all the same. It's like if you take out some cultural things and you take out language, You're dealing with the same kind of bureaucracy, the same kind of work, the same kind of management, the same kind of businesses, the same kind of prejudices, the same kind of outlook of people when it deals with hackers and security. It is literally the biggest thing that surprised me more than anything else during my travel, especially when I first started traveling, was how little different it was when I traveled. It's like the locations are different, the architecture is different, but the people are people.
So you mean people? You mean to say people are not defined by their language, their orientation, their skin color, or anything? Is that what I'm hearing?
I know it's strange, but I mean that's one of the things I liked about the old school hacking, the old school BBS, is because back in the day, you were defined by what you said, by what you typed on a keyboard, by what your thoughts were. That's how you were judged. That's how you were thought of. It's like it wasn't your preconceived notion if you were a guy or a girl or a whatever or a dog. You know, it's like, because no one knows if you're a dog on the internet. It's like, except for the NSA now. But still, it's like, you didn't know. It was just, you were judged by what you provided, the content and the comments that you provided and the knowledge that you shared or the questions that you asked defines you. Nowadays, unfortunately, we have, you know, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. So you can actually tell that, oh, there's a person behind that. And this is what they look like. And this is what they believe in. And that's muddied the waters somewhat. But it's still at the end of the day, it's just people being people. It's like there's a little thing that I do every time I travel, especially to someplace new, and I spend a day walking through the city, not going on a tour, not looking at the tour spots. I walk through the city. I spend 8 hours walking through Barcelona, over 7 hours walking through Cairo. It's like, I mean, I've done that to Paris, to Berlin, to Singapore, to Shanghai, to Beijing. I mean, like 11 hours in Beijing to the Zidan district, which is a non-Western area. And you take breaks and you sit down on a sidewalk and you literally watch the people walk by. You see the people going to school. You see the people going to work, taking their kids out somewhere for a day trip. You see all the people do it, and literally there is zero difference or differentiation between going and doing that in Boston, San Francisco, or Tallahassee. It's literally the same thing. It's like that's one of the most frightening things about our cultures is that no one addresses the fact about how similar they are. We like to fear the unknown.
Absolutely. And speaking of social media, I got a little piece of intel from someone today that you're doing some research for a new talk, and it was so good that you got ice cream. Any crumbs or tidbits about the new research?
I'm doing my talk. This talk I'm doing a little bit different. It's called How to Secure Your Banks and Enterprises. And in parentheses, it says from someone who robs banks and enterprises for a living. And the whole basis on it is I'm tired of old days. I'm tired of people talking about how awesome that this very convoluted, very hard to react in the real world exploit is. And phishing is stupid. And phishing is lame. And doing basic attacks and basic network things are like stupid. And I'm thinking, and it got to me to thinking about all that. I'm like, really? Because I don't know. It's like, I could use this real convoluted escape and come in and break in like Ocean's 11, or I could walk in the front door and go YOLO and steal all the millions. The millions are gone either way. One's easier, one looks sexier, but you know what? My result was more direct and faster. So, who's actually better? And so what I do is when I'm doing a talk this year, what I'm trying to do, I can't do it to all of them, but I'm trying my best, is I literally want to show in a visceral way to the audience how lucky they are to dodge a bullet. It's like how vulnerable they really are. So what I do is I Google the location I'm going to, biggest bank, and I start from there. It's like I literally create a, I don't have permission from the people that I'm attacking, but all I'm doing is gathering publicly available information off the internet and showing how I can craft that into a very convincing spear phishing attack that I do not send out. But if everybody in the audience would recognize, yeah, I would have clicked on that link if you would have sent that to me. And doing this research, I'm trying to explain to people what employees are actually sharing on the internet, how they can be a victim of these kind of attacks, how social media is a huge undefended border into a corporation. And this one I found just, once again, this is random. This is like a car accident, a lightning strike, or a plane falling on you. It's like you can't prevent it. It's going to happen. A bad guy is going to target you for some reason at some point. And how can you withstand it? And this guy, this technical guy that I just randomly picked on, was talking about a McAfee upgrade that he was doing on the server that he was using. There was another, by searching for his name also, I found a malware sample up on a public website. And this is the one that got me, was it literally shows their email addresses. It shows their internal IP addresses. It was the computer names of the computers. It showed the branch number that it was at. It showed that the guy was downloading illegal torrents, like Game of Thrones. It showed where he was saving them to, that he wasn't patching. He loaded SQL Server on his desktop that he wasn't supposed to, and it wasn't patched. He was also not patching his Windows or his Adobe properly. They talked about the ramifications of it. He was a contractor. They showed the name of the contractor. I've got all this information that's publicly available now, and it shows like how they, in their screenshots, there are screenshots of their Excel tables that show the names of their computers, the branches, the shows the user cluster, the division, the barcode, the computer, the user location, and the user employee number. And some of these look like it's actually possibly user IDs. In other words, it's horrific. And this is, I mean, this could totally lead to a compromise of a company. It's one of the first times I've ever seen something going like, do I have to do responsible disclosure for this? Because this is horrible. And then I thought about it later and like, no, YOLO, I'm going to show them in the audience, because people need to understand it's never going to happen to you. And that's the problem. That's the biggest problem with management. And that's one of the biggest things that I'm trying to show in this talk is I'm trying to show people this is how easy it is. I'm not going to talk to you about how complex it is. I'm not going to tell you about how high tech and how wizardry and leap my skills are. I'm going to show you, based off a Google search, how I just took down your company. And it's like, and this is a company that doesn't realize they're being attacked. But guess what? They got chosen, they're being attacked, and this could just, it is so random and so arbitrary, they understand this could have been them. It's like with a different result on a Google search, it could have been them. I did a security awareness class for this one company in New York, and it was a company there. And I showed them from just looking at a guy's Instagram, I showed them how I would kidnap his daughter, take her hostage, and use that to destroy the visitor center at the new World Trade Center memorial site. And I mean, I don't want to go into all the details of it and stuff, you know, because it's specific, but I mean, I literally showed from like this one event, from this one Google search, from seeing this LinkedIn profile that I randomly selected, how I could cascade that to using him as a way to get means to this site that would allow me to launch a PF-85 rocket to the visitor center. And it hit them, and you can see the looks on their face, and they realize that's not cool. You know, it's like, but that's how arbitrary and random these attacks can be. And you can never say it's not going to happen to me. It's like, because you're an IP address out on the internet, you are randomly being scanned. This has shown a great example of that. It's like that they don't care about where you're from. They don't care about what you're making, what your product is, or what your company represents. You're an IP address on the internet. Are you vulnerable? Are you not vulnerable? That's what they care about. Can you give me money or not give me money? That's what they care about.
So I recall your talk at B-Sides Indy and the part of the bank stuff. And I would like to say thanks. I'm still getting ads for the bank that you talked about at B-Sides Indy.
Yeah, you were there. You followed that. That's what that was. It's like it was a random attack.
Yeah, absolutely. And my next question that goes with that is, I have an open source intelligence and social engineering talk, which granted, you went a completely different direction than mine. But I want to know what exactly is my background, because there's on my PC, because there's a lot of overlap there in terms of the scare factor. Purely kidding. But you're absolutely right. You know, the talk I call Old Reliable is basically creating the perfect spearfish using OSINT. It's just I gave it a different name. And, you know, you go and you get that OSINT, you find that context around people, which I go a different approach than yours for the most part. But basically, you know, I get the data about the person and then I start to understand them. I start to, you know, I lurk a lot to the point to where I can in some cases, even guess where someone's going to lunch with good accuracy because I've built such a profile on them. And the thing is, the most technical thing I'm doing is Google searches or maybe, just maybe, ReconNG, which is not very technical at all. Do you see any mitigations for social engineering or open source intelligence coming in the near future by chance?
Yes, and it's going to be, and I'm going to beat this horse till it's 8 feet in the ground, okay? But it's the same thing, training the employees to let them understand. I keep going back to this one thing that hit me when I first learned about it, was Pearl Harbor, 1941, December 7th, there was a private manning the radar station. He saw planes coming from a different direction that he was not expecting to see them come from. A whole squadron of planes. And he went to the guy that he reported to, and he says, look, I've got these planes coming in. They're coming from a different location. And the guy said, those are probably our training planes. Nothing to worry about.
Oh,
and
boy.
That is the human failing. We never want to think the worst case scenario. And until we start training our employees to think in the worst case scenario situation, they will always be vulnerable. It's like we never want to think because, and that's the reason why I'm successful. When I break into a place, I'm not successful because I'm adorable or I'm super coy or like super spy gadget mode or anything. No, because the employee is looking at me and they're not thinking that this person is about to do me harm. This person is about to rob me. It's like, until we start teaching our employees that they need to treat every unknown situation as a possible hostile situation, it's not going to get better. And it's not to show that they need to distrust people. They need to understand under situations when they receive an email that it needs to be suspect. When they see someone in their facility or in an area they've never seen before, they need to question or report. It's like until we start teaching them that, they're going to fail. And it's not going to be their failing. It's going to be the failing of security. It's the way I look at it is if I went into a bank with a ski mask and shotgun, I'm going to have a bad day. Because guess what? They are trained for that. They know that that occurs. I show up in a suit and USB drive. They should be trained for that. And I should also have a bad day. It's like, and we're not training them to worry about those other kinds of scenarios. They're out there. They're on television now. They're pop culture references. We need to start treating and training our employees to be aware of those kind of attacks as well. It's not the gun that's going to get you now. It's the payload.
Jason Street, if we were in church right now, I would be fanning myself and shouting amen and preach.
I'm still trying to find the right page in the hymnal myself. Because you're preaching to the choir there.
But I love it. I feel invigorated because I believe the same thing, and I feel validated because, you know, since I'm still new to this, people still like to laugh at me and say that I'm paranoid. And I tell them that it was, you know, the realization that my natural paranoia and distrust of things is, you know, what I realized was a career path in information security.
Exactly.
I feel vindicated. So thank you.
And you brought up a good point. It's like one of the biggest things we need to stop doing is preaching to the choir. It's like the last couple of years, I have gone outside of information security. I've spoken at U.S. Chamber of Commerce events, local regional banking association events. I spoke at the Wholesale Beer Association in Vegas once last year. There's all these different organizations that need to know about security. I talked to PhDs and pharmaceutical companies just a couple of months ago. You need to be able to start reaching out outside of a B-Sides, outside of a hacking conference. Start looking for other conferences in your area that are starting out there, and reach out to them. Say, hey, are you looking to hear from another speaker? It's like a speech on proper security tips for the regular user. It's like, get the message outside of our echo chamber. It's like we all agree that the things are messed up. We now need to find ways to bring that message outwards to others so they can learn.
Yeah, that's what I love doing with the librarian group, since I come from that world. A month ago, I spoke at Computers and Libraries and did IT Security 101 session that I co-presented. In 2 weeks, I'm going to be in Ottawa speaking to the Canadian Law Library Association, doing an introduction to InfoSec. So yeah, I hear you. I love speaking to the librarian audiences about introducing them to this topic, and even just giving them vocabulary words so that they know what these headlines mean. And I'll say to them, if you see your client, especially if they're a law firm librarian, if you see your client's name in the letters DDoS in a headline, that's a big deal. You need to click on that article and you need to read it and you need to get it to the attorney who's in charge of that client. And these are things that I've gotten feedback that the librarians have told me. They've just glazed over these articles because they didn't know, you know, what a DDoS was. So I explained it to them in very simplistic terms. They don't need to know the technical answer of what a DDoS is. Very simply explain what it is and just know that that's really important. And they're like, okay, got it. And then I teach them the next vocabulary word. So I think that's a good message for everyone to get out there and kind of get outside the echo chamber. Joe, was there something you wanted to add to that too?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Something that I'm working on right now is I'm trying to find a happy medium on a way to train people on how to secure their children. Because when you can train the normals how to protect their children in an online environment, they're going to learn the applicability for at work and at home. And not only are they going to evangelize for you, but they're also going to be better for doing so. That's kind of what I'm working on in the awareness field right now, and I'd like to get your cut on it, Jason. But before I get to that, just to echo your thoughts on training, the conclusion of that talk that I mentioned of mine, it is, hey, you need to train your people. Don't focus on some technical solution to solve all your big mean boogeyman social engineering problems. You know, train your people. Train them in what to do, how to respond. If they click a fish, don't punish them for it unless it's a recurring theme. Train them. Explain to them exactly who they need to report it to, how they need to report it, and what actions they need to take. Remove the doubt. But, you know, that, yeah.
Yeah, I tell people, it's like, I don't care how good your Blinky Box is and how advanced persistent threat detection and threat hunting and cyber capable it is. If it's got the option for the user to go and click, yes, allow me to this site so I can see the dancing kittens, they're going to click on the button to see the dancing kitten. Your technology will fail. It's like, because at the end of the day, humans will trump technology. It's like, so stop trying to get technology to solve a human problem.
Absolutely. I mean, you very easily could have $500,000 up to $5 million or more in security infrastructure. But if I can fish one of your employees and make it through, or I can fish your firewall administrator to open a port for me, you're done.
Yeah, I tell people I don't have to bypass your firewall if I can bypass the receptionist.
Absolutely. And on the topic of kittens, I just want to plug this website called kittenwar.com. If you ever need a break during the workday, go to kittenwar.com. They are not a sponsor of the show, but it's definitely a really awesome site.
I've been there before. It is indeed.
So with that being said, Tracy, do you have anything else to add at this time on the topic?
No, I just, I like hearing Jason's feedback because personally I feel like it's validating things that I already thought, but it just also, is just a great message to spread, and knowing that Jason Street has my back spreading this message, it feels
absolutely
good. Is there anything, Jason, you think that, that isn't getting, I mean, I know there's a lot of things that aren't getting out there. Is there, maybe like IoT, for example, is that something that should be ramped up more to talk about? Is there one area in particular you think people aren't mentioning enough as far as educating users?
Well, I think what it is that it's not that they're not acknowledging the fact. It's like, I mean, we talk about webcams. Like, oh my gosh, there's webcams. There was a college taken out by DDoS because of the light bulbs and vending machines. They had smart light bulbs and vending machines that were constantly querying seafood restaurants, and it took down the whole college network. That is actually a true story, though it sounds like I just made it up to prove my point. I did not. We're putting a lot of things on the internet, and I'm gonna like freak everybody out because you know what? Sometimes certain devices, putting them out on the internet helps. It's like creating networks for the devices to communicate with each other and talk and share information can be great. But at the same time, maybe your juicer doesn't need to be on the internet. It's like, you know, it's like maybe the webcam showing you in your living room do not need to be on the internet. So it's not just a matter of what the services are providing. It's how we're segmenting them from the public space. It's like, and how are we keeping them protected so they don't access the public space or compromised amongst themselves? So that's a very that's not going to be solved by me. That's not going to be solved by anybody. In a couple of months, but we do acknowledge it. That's one thing I like about Pony Express, that they are realizing, and they've been heralding before the Myra botnet the problems with the internet of devices, the internet of evil things, we call it, where they're talking about there's so many different devices connecting into a corporate network now that are actually sharing the same network, which is dangerous. We knew when the BlackBerrys first came out, people were putting the BlackBerry server on the same segment in their internal network. And it took a while for people to discover that was a very bad thing. Well, it's the same thing with these internet of devices, the Internet of Thing devices, that we need to understand that they can't share the same network, they can't share the same space, they can't share the same privileges and accesses that we give other devices, because they're not other devices. They're some of the firmware can't be updated, or their passwords are hard coded in them. There are definite vulnerabilities. It's like you're getting cheap access to devices, but you know that also means a lot of times it's unsecure. Security was never factored in when these devices were created. It was speed, use, and cost effectiveness, not security ever.
Absolutely. And as we go to the final break, I'm gonna drop two jokes. One you've probably heard before, and that's the S in IoT is for security. I heard a new one recently, and it's you can't spell idiot without IoT.
Oh, that's a good one. That is correct.
But
yeah.
So with that being said, we're going to take our final break, and when we come back, we'll get some parting pieces of wisdom from Jason and say goodbye. Stay tuned.
Don't forget to check out our blog at advancedpersistentsecurity.net/blog. Follow us on Twitter at @advpersistentsec and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/advancedpersistentsecurity.
Welcome back from the final break. With me this evening, to reiterate, we have Jason Street and Tracy InfoSec Sherpa Mayleaf. But we've been talking about a hodgepodge of things, such as breaking into information security, breaking into banks, social engineering, awareness, just a general overall good discussion that's very reaffirming of what we're already trying to say. And it's good that we have someone with the clout that Jason has to push harder to try to get us where we need to be and branch out away from our echo chambers. But unfortunately, as with all things, all good things must come to an end. And we've pretty much reached the end of this show. So in doing so, I'll first turn the floor over to you, Jason. Give us any parting pieces of advice geared to the beginner and the seasoned professional, and then tell us how you want to be contacted if you want to be contacted. The floor is yours.
Okay. I think one of the main things that I tell anybody, beginner or anybody that's in that deals with the computer or deals in a situation where they may be targeted, which is actually, you know, a person that's a human, there is a voice in the back of your head that tells you something's not right. It's like in every engagement I've always been to, it's like I've always done, it's like I've always seen that expression of that person where they have that thought. And they have two choices, to listen to it or to shake it off going, no, it can't be because it's, you know, it's not the training planes. It's like they have that moment. And so my advice is always when you're sitting in a situation and you receive an unusual email or you see someone that doesn't seem quite right, don't just shrug it off. It's like act on it. Do something about it. So that's one of my key things. Like, always just act on it. It's like, I have a guy who sends me spam emails all the time because he's helping me out, but he's conscious about it. I mean, it's like, I don't complain about the fact that he keeps sending me spam that I don't need. I've got a spam filter that he sends me spam on. It's like, I'm happy with the fact that he cares about it and he's addicted to it. And he's not been fished. He's not been compromised because he takes that stuff seriously. And that's a good thing, and we need to encourage that more. So that's probably my parting thought, is to let humans understand and give them the permission to be rude, give them the permission to be suspicious, and give them the empowerment to act on it. It's like give them a number to call, give them an email to send to, give them a way to actually act on that security thought that they have. And the best way to contact me is usually on Twitter. I live stream my life on Twitter. So JaySonStreet on Twitter. Those are the key things. And my show's coming out May 9th on National Geographic, which is sort of cool. And which actually shows me robbing a bank and people letting me through, not thinking that I'm a threat.
Awesome. And what's that show called?
The show is on the Nat Geo channel. The series is called Breakthrough. The episode that I'm on is Cyber Terror. It's like, cause you know, cyber. And, it's really funny. The funniest part about the whole show is that it started off being about, specializing or focusing on, Junaid Hussein, who was a hacker who, was recruited, into ISIS and was a hacker for ISIS, and then he was droned and killed. And he was, you know, not too nice of a person toward the end. And that was going to be like the B-roll, talking about what I've done as like the good side of it. It's like as a good hacker, and it turned out that they did a really good focusing on the positive side and aspects of hacking instead of just the negative side of what he did. So I like that a lot. It's got Hack5 Darren. Darren Kitchen, Khalil Sanawi. It's got all three of us working hand in hand, instead of, you know, working on it. Dave Kennedy does a great cameo with some of his cool tool sets. You got Pure Hate in there, you know, ragging me a little bit. but there's a lot of good positive aspects of hacking on display, not just what a bad guy's done.
Excellent. So with Dave Kennedy and his presence, do you get any Hornsby attacks?
No, but he did talk about he did a good SMS attack. And literally, the scene that he's in, it looks like a drug deal going bad. It's hilarious. So it's I think it's going to be a good show. It's May 9th, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time in the U.S. It's actually a global premiere. So they're talking about how it's in 171 countries and 45 languages. So there should be a couple people watching it, I hope.
Wow. And congratulations for that. If for whatever reason the show comes out after that, I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes as well. There'll be links to everything mentioned, including your Twitter, in the show notes. So Tracy, give us your parting pieces of wisdom and tell us how to contact you.
Oh, my parting pieces of wisdom. Be nice to each other. And as Jason has set the precedent of give hugs, awkward or otherwise, to people. And you can contact me on Twitter at InfoSecSherpa.
Until next time, stay secure.
Thank you for listening to the Advanced Persistent Security Podcast. Until next time, stay secure, and don't forget to subscribe to this podcast.